two weekends ago. I went to Dallas Comic Con, or attempted to on Saturday, and the website strictly said open 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. So I showed up at 11 a.m., well, actually 10:30, and I pre-bought my ticket, got my armband, got ready to go in, and 11 o'clock came by, and they decide 11 o'clock doesn't mean you get to go in. That means they basically shuttle everyone into a parking garage for another 90 minutes to wait to go in.
What the heck?
Okay.
So I got pissed off waiting for 90 minutes, still not getting to go in. I was covered in sweat because it was Dallas, Texas, you know, 98 degrees, high humidity because it just rained 2 days ago. So I was like, okay, I left. I emailed them. And the first email response I got back was, okay, we'll refund you sometime next week. So I emailed them back saying, perhaps you don't know who you're dealing with. So I basically told them who they're dealing with. And they emailed me back saying, okay, we're really sorry. The fire marshal basically fucked us up by telling us that we could keep on selling tickets when we couldn't. And people weren't listening when I said, okay, that we hit our maximum. And he offered for me to come as their guest on Sunday, which I did. And I just walked up. I said, hey, I want to talk to the guy in charge. I gave him the name, and they brought me inside, gave me the armband, said, okay, we're really sorry. Let's talk sometime later on. They want to talk to me sometime in the next week or so about something. So they let me in on their, you know, for free. So I got to go in, arranged to have Kevin Conroy show up on my podcast sometime in the next month or so.
Yay!
Talk to Amanda Connor. She is awesome, by the way. There was no line for Amanda Connor.
Are you going to get Amanda Connor? Please, even though she's just a, comic book artist, please say that you.
You know what? I should, because I got her contact. So I'll do it. But it was amazing. There was no line for Amanda Connor.
That's stupid.
Actually, I was talking to some other artists I know that are in the industry, and they're like, what? No line for Amanda Connor? I'm like, yeah, there was no line.
What the fuck?
Okay, so wait a minute.
Obviously, Fest doesn't know who Amanda Connor is.
I don't. And I'm more so confused about that you're like, do you know who I am sort of thing. And it's like, I didn't realize Animation Aficionados was big shit as far as to be able to pull that card.
Use that. I basically use my comic cred as well.
What big name stuff have you done? I don't know if you're doing any big name stuff, so I guess I'm confused why you pull that card.
Well, the thing is, I have people like Marv Wolfman on my contacts list. I have if I mention who trained me on how to ink, people are interested in interviewing me, so I don't name drop that. But basically, I can do lots of name dropping is basically what I can do. And they apparently like, once they realize that they realize they can't just say, oh, we'll just refund you sometime next week. They realize, oh, holy shit, we fucked up. We should not have put people in a parking garage like cattle for 90 minutes.
You're like, do you know who I am? I know many people that are more important than me.
No, that actually worked. That actually worked. So shut up.
You can just say that constantly enough, even if you're just pulling that all out of your ass, you can scare people.
I'll do that too.
Actually, you can't. If you say, do you know who I am? People do go, oh shit.
I'll do that too. Do you know who I am? I know Ben Carver, and he knows lots of important people.
Actually, I have one of the best "Do you know who I am?" Stories. I don't even remember the guy's name. That's how stupid it is. But he played for the 2003 Alabama basketball team, like the college basketball team. And he came into GameStop and he was like, "Do you know who I am?" And I said to him, "Do you know who I am?" And he was like. What? I went, I am Kitty Hawk, and I write Sparkling Generation. And that's when he said, and he gave me his name, and he said, I play basketball. And then we started talking. It was just natural from there.
Well, like I said, it actually worked, and everything worked out fine. I didn't want to pull that trick, but basically, mm-hmm. when they basically brushed me off, I got pissed yeah. because I really was looking forward to it. I really wanted to talk to Kevin Conroy and yeah. Mr. Dean Anderson and yeah. Colin Ferguson. And
well, all okay, right.
You got in. So hopefully you threw it out there. You said, hey, I'm really upset, and they decided to do the right thing and – you know, help get you in there. And it was, hey, it was Sunday. So, you know, there was
sadly, Sadler was not there.
Aww.
All right. We have to get this party yeah. started.
You're listening to the Webcomic Beacon at webcomicbeacon.com.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Webcomic Beacon here at webcomicbeacon.com. Part of the web. Why do you always have to interrupt? Part of the Webcast Beacon Network at webcastbeacon.com. Do you know who I am? I'm Fess! Yeah. And with me, returning once again, Ben Carver from Animation Aficionados.
Good to be back.
Kitty Hawk from Sparkling Generation Valkyrie Yuki.
Glad to be back.
And Monty Road from, he has a site on DeviantArt at montyroad.deviant.
It's called Vegetables for Dessert, but yeah, no website yet. And if you steal the domain name, I can always rename my strip.
Well, you can just search on Google, just search for Vegetables for Dessert.
Oh, I already have.
Yeah.
Get the URL now before some sitter gets it. Ugh, those people suck. Anyway.
Get an Iceland one.
Oh, God. So this is going to be the new comic news and discussion recorded on May 28th, 2013. And let's just jump right on into it. At the top of our list today, we have the 2013 Reuben Awards. The nominees had to have been listed, and the winners have been picked. This is who actually Nathan, you're the one who first picked this found this for us.
Yes, I am. So I guess the way to lead into it is that the Reuben Awards are, I believe, the oldest continuing series of awards for cartooning in general. The NCS, the National Cartoonist Society. How long have they been around? Oh, have they been around since when? I believe the 19 it was earlier last century. Hold on. Let me check what's on them.
But they've been around a long time.
They've
almost
been around
as long, almost
very
as long as
the well, because like well, I mean like because they'd have I guess they would've been around like maybe in like 1910 or something around there because like the newspaper comic really came into its own like 1890s or something like that.
Yeah, Thomas well, Nast.
Born in 1946.
So it's younger than the sandwich.
That's pretty late.
Hmm. Yeah, actually, it kind of is.
Yeah, if you think about movies and like the emergence of the Oscar, and then oh well.
Yeah, but I mean, considering how you'd had newspaper strips, Kale and I were kicking around since the beginning of the century. Hmm.
Yeah.
So it took half a century to get started and running. All right. Well. They've been dealing out awards since the 1950s, and back in the earlier days when the, you know, primary industry for artists was you could either be a cartoonist or an illustrator, they were one of the most prestigious organizations you could join. But, I mean, ever since, you know, the decline of the newspaper, of the print industry, and say, you know, the emergence of the electronic and, well, I mean, the movie entertainment industry, too. It's really not the most prestigious organization anymore. And to survive, they're trying to branch out. And they're now handing out awards to web cartoonists.
Yay!
So, yeah, more people trying to give us awards and make us feel special. What do you?
Well, I mean, you can put it on a resume, and it helps in getting into conventions.
Oh yeah,
mm-hmm.
Well, especially with the Reuben yeah. Awards would.
Yeah, especially that one.
Not the Webcomic Beacon Awards we did like 3 years ago. maybe not.
You could put that on there. It looks good.
The non-annual webcomic Beacon.
Yeah, we did that one year and it didn't work out, so we didn't do it again. So, but yeah, this was. But you had actually also mentioned that there might have been some controversy because basically most of the short form webcomics or online comics that were listed.
All of the short form webcomics were originated from GoComics.com.
Yeah, that's a little shady.
All these artists are already in the loop. I believe to be on GoComics.com. Well, let's see. With Comic Sherpa, I know you could just pay for the spot. To be on GoComics.com, do you have to have a deal with the syndicate?
You do?
I thought it's a syndicate owned thing.
GoComics syndicate
owned. There's okay. No question about that.
I thought there were some comics on there that were original that weren't printed or in print.
No. What he means is that you have to be beholden to the company. Basically, they get the publishing rights.
Oh,
so yeah.
Might or might not. I'm not sure about that, but I mean, it is run through the syndicate's website, so.
It sounds like it's one of those.
No, there's a comic I read on Go Comics. I'm blanking on the name right now, but he actually self-published some comics and comic books or collections himself.
Yeah.
I believe
you can do
it.
That, but you basically are paying. I think you're paying them from what I'm getting here.
Oh, okay.
Well, the thing about it too is that if you look at actually all the strips in the short form entry too, is that. They're all newspaper format. You know, they're designed to be newspaper strips that haven't made it into newspapers yet, and also the sense of humor. It's very, how can I say it? You know, it's the kind of stuff you're used to seeing in newspapers and, you know, depending on who you are, may have been bored with decades ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. But,
you just quickly check out the selections. It's just... How can I say it? This looks like stuff that would be loved by a bunch of 50, 60-year-old men whose taste hasn't changed in 3 decades.
Well, okay, in the case of the online comic strips, I think it's because it's the first year they decided to go for the bigger strips because they got the Oatmeal and Penny Arcade. So I think that's okay for the first year because it's kind of like, hey, we're sort of edging in, just, you know, a little bit into the water. Let's go for the more mainstream kind of ones.
But they didn't pick any of the mainstreams, unless I'm not reading the same list you are.
I'm in like Comics Beats. What?
I saw online comics short form nominees were Ten Cats, Rabbits Against Magic, and Mac. And the online comics long form was Untold Tales of Bigfoot, Meredith Grand's Octopus Pie, which is the only one we're gonna know, and then Muscles Diablo and Where Terror Lurks.
I'm looking at the Comics Beat link. Reuben Ward's announced with first ever webcomics category.
That was 2012, if you're mentioning.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that was last year. That was the Oatmeal Penny
Arcade.
Okay,
so last year that was the edging into the water.
Yeah,
here
that was
this,
the water.
Here this looks like, they're all like Go Comics, so I guess.
Well, the short form ones are.
So they're still playing it pretty safe.
Well,
by newspaper standards, but I mean, it's just, you know, this is stuff that you're used to seeing in the newspaper industry that, I mean, do you see similar strips like this that have gained a strong following online? I mean, I've heard nobody ranting or raving about anything online that, you know, looks anything like these strips. These are, you know, old, comfy, familiar newspaper strips.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they may not have a longer history, but it's just the style of writing, the artwork. It just feels also 1980s.
It looks more 1990s, that roundish kind of bubbly look. But
so I think it's the Eisners that has a little bit more open opportunity for people to
barely
to make nominations.
There's still no award that is. That equally presents webcomics versus traditional yet, because they still sort of shuttle it away in its own like subcategory still.
Well, I was just gonna say, so they had more if you've been in print is what you're saying.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Yeah. It's still like that, and it's going to be for quite some time until someone creates an award that's exclusively for webcomics and actually gets some traction. Has to do both.
You don't think the Ignits have grabbed traction yet?
I think webcomics do have attraction with like the average person, but I think within like the old industries,
right?
They
right.
really have it because they yeah.
For the accolades is what I'm saying.
Because well, more
everyone
more,
reads webcomics, but
well, but accolades are usually backed by the industry itself.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
And there is no formal industry at this point.
And there doesn't need to be a formal industry for webcomics either.
Well, yeah. that's part of the beauty of it. I think that the best way to get a webcomic award started is to do it small. Like a good example of this is the Raspies, which. Yeah. Are kind of like a joke award, but the Raspies, you know what made the Raspies take off?
No.
Humor, in my opinion.
The Raspies are the Raspberry Awards, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
Given them the worst film, movies, yeah. worst movies of all time, and what made the Raspies take off was when Bill Cosby won for Leonard Part 6. Bill Cosby said he will gladly accept an award if it was made to the same standard as an Oscar. So the guys that did the Raspies were like a bunch of guys living in an apartment. They're like, holy shit, we need to take out a bank loan to make this statuette for Bill Cosby. And that's where the Golden Raspberries like took off.
That's excellent. That's showmanship.
They went to debt to make the first official statue, and then all of a sudden everyone knows who the Golden Raspberries are.
That's showmanship. But there used to be the I don't know if they still do it, the Webcomics Creator Comic Award.
No, there is no long-standing Webcomics Award. Anything
yeah, but
that
this
was
like this was like for a few years. I remember this because I know it, and think I was I won the superhero one.
Yeah, yeah. I was a part of it. I was sort of a part of it too. I was part of the last year that they actually ran it.
Okay.
Web Cartoonist Choice Awards is what it was.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's been copiers like I don't know. There's one newspaper. Let's see here. I don't know where
it is. But I think it's really not necessary to have awards, because awards are really, well, awards are kind of about promotion. And
exactly.
I don't know if we really need that kind of promotion anymore, because I think people are pretty aware of things now. Because, like, the thing is that it's used by, like, I would say the Oscars is mostly like, hey, go see this movie. It's great. It has a nomination.
Any sort of award for webcomics where it has the people on the website get to vote on it is a complete bullshit award it's a bullshit award as far as, you know, it doesn't count in the grand. It's fine, it's your websites, it's not the definitive they win, it's your website picked that. It's
well,
not
it's the
like
same, it's exact same thing for the Oscars. It's not even the people voting for it.
Yeah.
it's the other actors voting for it.
Yeah, but that's more of a standard. It's not like it's
and who does the most voting on webcomic awards? Other webcomic artists.
Right. Exactly. So it's the same thing.
If you
thing.
Have a large enough army of fans to send their way.
Oh, well yeah, you could
get
yeah.
open voting.
It's incredibly manipulative.
But even if you had like a little army of fans, there are ways to do voting that would account
no.
for that.
No,
there are methods.
Only real way we're going to come close to any sort of Oscars equivalent is if we have it's pure voted and nominated is what it is. You don't let the readers vote on it. That's
Why?
Not how it, that's a popularity contest. That's
no,
not a definitive.
You can make it not a popularity and also
people have tried. It doesn't work.
Isn't the point that the people like it, and doesn't that make it popular if they like it?
Yeah, but it's not an industry. There's nobody has ever done a successful sort of, quote unquote industry award.
Then that's crap. I don't like those because
that's
it's
fine.
Not really reflective of reality.
But I don't like when
because
people,
every time that someone tries to include webcomics, we get stuff exactly like this story here, where it's it's mostly Go comics or
it, because this is clicky. This is just pure clicky and stuff. Like when you just make only creators can do it, then it's extremely clicky. It's not really reflective of what the public actually sees as a great movie or a great comic or whatever.
But
Kitty Hawk is actually right here. It's if you get a lot of screen actors voting on movies, you get a lot of art house choice films winning Oscars that no one's ever seen. It's probably in French about someone waiting to buy a loaf of bread which represents their soul.
Ben, I think
but
you're
I mean, there are good
hang
movies.
On you guys. Hang on. Okay. All right, hang on. I need to jump in here. Now, what I'm saying is, like, there is no Webcomics Industry Awards. There is nothing there's been a couple attempts, and they've all failed. Now, I have no problem with people, with websites doing their, this is our website, sort of choice awards. That's fine. But don't pretend that it's going to be some sort of industry authority. That's where I get pissed off, that you are not the industry standard here. Don't pretend that you are. Have your website award.
There should not be a webcomic industry standard. There should not be, because once you put that standard in, you're all of a sudden being just like the old-fashioned media that we're trying to escape.
Yeah, you start locking it up.
That's fine to me.
The industry is too diverse, really, to have just, you know, a formal set of awards. With awards, really, what can you hope to achieve? I mean, first of all, you can identify and promote up-and-coming work. You can recognize reader popularity, or, you know, you can pin certain accomplished works as being prestigious to be esteemed by other artists in industry. That's, I mean, what else can you really accomplish with awards, I guess, is the question.
Yeah. It's not really necessary.
Yeah. I think this is mostly beating a dead horse into the ground at this point, but it's kind of nice that, they're giving it a shot at least, and it'd be interesting to see where this goes from here. And it'd be nice to see who might break that barrier in the coming years. You know, that's what
not
I'm mostly
for a while.
Interested in. Maybe.
That barrier is going to be there for a long while.
There's some bitterness.
No. So, but I think this is a great time to say that this fall, 2013, the Webcomic Beacon will be doing a top 100 Webcomic Beacon favorite webcomics of all time. Ooh. And that's not an award thing, really.
The API thing.
Yeah, I've been asking like a lot of the past crew and trying to come up with a total of 100 of all of our personal top favorites. Because I think that's where it's very important. And in doing so, I'll have to say, man, there's a lot of stuff that just isn't around anymore or is completed or stopped updating.
Yeah.
So that's been a list. It'll be a challenging episode series to put together. It'll probably be like 4 episodes.
You should probably sing the list like Rob Paulson would.
Oh, man, that'd be awesome.
With his voice? No. God, no.
I'll sing it.
We'll look into that once I get a completed list, okay? All right.
Look, I will totally sing it for you.
Moving on to...
United States, Panama, Mexico.
Yeah,
moving
exactly.
on to the next news item, Kindle Worlds. If you haven't heard about this, you don't know what fan fiction is.
Hey!
Some days I wish I didn't.
Aw, fan fiction's fun.
It can be very fun and useful.
Or torturous.
So Amazon has decided to look into getting fanfic writers into their market so that they can sell and make some money. So Amazon can sell them to make some money, and so that the original creators can make some money, as in saying being licensed to write a fanfiction. So this is a brand new idea, and the contract that's in place has some fanficers up in arms about it because of the where the rights go to the written work. Apparently some fanficers think that because they wrote it, they get to keep all the rights to the written work, that the original copyright owners shouldn't be able to just take their writing and use it without the ability of being sued for it. Imagine that.
Well, part of the problem here is basically, and this is a topic that Kitty Hawk and I differ somewhat in, but it's about IP. Mm-hmm. And yeah. Kitty Hawk's extremely, extremely liberal on IP, and not completely hard-nosed conservative on it, but a little bit more towards moderate, because I still believe IP should exist, but I believe the current model, the model that's been around for 100 years, is not suited for the internet and has to adapt.
Yeah, and I believe that, honestly, IP doesn't have a place in this world anymore. It did when, like, communication was much slower. But since communication is almost instantaneous now, it's really unnecessary. And also, we all know who the creator is now because we can just Google that.
But again, this is a case where
protecting your IP costs money. So if you don't have $1 million, you don't have IP.
It does cost some money, but back to the point of this is a case where a couple of creators are actually saying, okay, we will allow fan fiction writers to write fan fiction and be available through Amazon's marketplace, and we're just taking a cut. And fan fiction writers still do make some money off of this, mm-hmm. but the thing is this is traditional IP, like giving some leeway, and they've never given leeway in the past like this before, so this is actually kind of interesting. And even then, for some of the people that are a little bit more on IP shouldn't exist, and if I write fan fiction it's mine, this still isn't good enough for them.
This is better. I will admit that this is a better model, but the idea that the original rights holder can use the text without the person's permission, without asking them. Like, if there was a method in which they could ask the person who writes the fan fiction, hey, we would like to take excerpts from this and use it, I think that that would be pretty cool. Yeah. But the idea that they can do it whenever they want to...
I'm not 100% certain on that declaration.
Okay. But I'm just saying that that's how it is, then that's not cool. But if it's a, hey... if we want to, can we ask you permission to use it? I think that's a little better. I think that this is a step in the right direction. I know that IP isn't going to completely disappear, so this is
I think this is a good step in the right direction, because it is traditional IP holders making the first step this time, which they've never done before.
Mm-hmm. And this is because of 50 Shades of Grey, because, like, think of if they've been able to do it as the original Twilight fan fiction, imagine how much money would have gone to the writer and to the publisher. You know,
Stephanie Meyer doesn't deserve any more money.
I'm just saying, if you believe in IP, then she would have gotten a lot of money and everyone would have been happy.
That's true, but at the same time, 50 Shades actually is stronger as its own original work.
I agree that it is, but I'm just saying.
And also, this is a case of something like a good example of this is there was a book Robert Heinlein wrote called Starship Troopers, I think we're all familiar with, at least vaguely. There was another science fiction writer that disagreed with how Heinlein wrote Starship Troopers' story. He wrote something that was like a rebuttal fiction, which was called The Forever War, which, you know, basically was his rebuttal to Starship Troopers, but it wasn't in the Starship Troopers universe. And I think that kind of thing sort of opens up new levels of fiction where someone's like, okay, I have my own feelings based on this book provoked lots of feelings in me. This piece of fiction provoked lots of feelings in me. I want to tell a story based on these feelings that this book gave me, but I can't tell, like, based off of this book. So yeah, that opens up some creativity there, and I think that that's a great part of the creative process.
And I agree.
As a creator, you're always best off branching off on your own. However, working within somebody's universe with a pre-made fan base that already exists, it's a lot easier to garner attention for yourself.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's true, but another example is, you know, sometimes when people, like, barely take an existing universe and change it just enough, then you get Aragorn.
That's when you have nepotism.
Or Star Wars of Dragons, whatever you want to call it today.
That's when you get nepotism involved.
Yeah. But anyway, I think you're right. That I honestly do believe, like, you should, if you really want to work through some like thought that you have. I think you're right in that, you know, you should create new characters. But I do think it's okay to write fan fiction. It's okay to want to use some characters. I mean, like, you could use Sherlock Holmes or something like that. Like, now you can only use, like, basically public domain characters. So I think it is kind of cool that they are trying, and they're trying to make... Because 50 Shades of Grey, it was sort of a wake-up call in that, one, there are fan fiction writers out there who, you know, people want to read their stuff. And two, self-publishing is really where it's at.
Yeah, and...
You just asked Chris Paolini.
There, I mean, there's also, it's like you, a lot of people, where a good thing of their fan fiction is, it can get some thoughts and ideas out of your head for something fun. And with this, you could maybe get a little bit of an audience and then hopefully do your own shit.
Every writer has a fan fiction phase. Every writer does.
Doujinshi's fine.
Every writer does. And I think that everyone can agree there that everyone here has at least done one piece of fan fiction in their life.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not sure. I don't remember. Maybe.
I'm ashamed.
No, I'm not ashamed. I was young. I was foolish.
Maybe as a child. I don't remember. But we're going to go ahead and take our first break, and we'll be right back after this.
This program is part of the Webcast Beacon Network. At webcastbeacon.com. You can find and follow us on Tumblr, Facebook, Google+, and Twitter. Just search for Webcast Beacon. Have thoughts or questions on an episode? You can leave us a voicemail at 1-320-310-0922 or email us at webcomicbeacon@gmail.com. The Webcast Beacon Network. Covering and promoting creativity in the creative process since 2007. Comics, art, and writing discussions, interviews, news, and reviews at webcastbeacon.com. Now, back to our show.
And we're back. And wouldn't you know it, since we've been gone, Yahoo has seemed to have bought Tumblr for $1.1 billion.
$1.1 billion.
Oh, God. That's less than what they paid for GeoCities, which was $3.6 billion.
Oh,
$3.6 billion.
In the 90s.
I know. That was retarded.
Yahoo, and the sad thing is this about Yahoo. Yahoo doesn't have a bad web. Yahoo doesn't have a bad web rank right now. They are under 10 of the best, the most viewed websites or most used web services right now. And Ben, they don't understand how to monetize that. That's the problem.
Ben. Let me check my email. Grandma checks her email on Yahoo. That's why Yahoo's still relevant. This is really just about Marissa. Okay, so basically, the new CEO is like Marissa Myers, I think is her name. I'm just going to call her Marissa because I know her first name. Marissa has been called Google Employee of the Month, you know, for many months running, because of some of the things she's been doing at Google, like ending work from home and such things like this. And recently she's gone on this buying spree of, like, she bought Tumblr, and now there's talking about buying Hulu. And I'll get into why that's stupid later, but basically this is a case, and I'm going to say it, this is a case of changing corporate culture is hard. Let's go shopping. Because this is just basically, she doesn't want to actually fix what's wrong with Yahoo, which if you ask me, I'm actually going to throw my hands up and say, fuck if I know. But in the case of Marissa, she's just basically said, screw this. I'm just going to go buy some stuff. It'll boost the stock. And then once it's high, I'm out of here.
I think that that's really what's going to happen too. But looking at it, going to Alexa, Yahoo's score is the number fourth number four in most used web services. And that's the thing. If they only knew how to monetize that, they actually would be okay. But the problem is they don't. I mean, Yahoo pretty much admitted, yeah, we're using Bing to do our searches now.
Which is using Google to do their searches. So
yeah, because Bing was caught using Google results in the past. So basically, Yahoo admitted, okay, we're not a search engine anymore. We're basically a mail service and a really cluttered homepage. They don't have anything new to offer. I mean, certain people still use the Yahoo groups, but not that many anymore because there's much better ways to collaborate online now.
Yeah.
And it's basically, Yahoo is a dying internet company that still has a good web rank. They just don't know how to monetize it.
Well, because the only reason they have that high rank. Oh, sorry.
Oh, they're just a large company with a lot of money that's sticking around because they're a large company with a lot of money.
Bingo.
Yeah, but they don't have anything new. They don't have anything interesting.
They just bought some stuff, dude. They just bought Tumblr, and they're about to buy Hulu.
Well, let's talk about
several
Tumblr
years past its prime.
Tumblr is interesting to me, especially as someone that's in webcomics, because I know lots of webcomic artists that use Tumblr specifically just as a daily sketch pad.
Or use it for the comics.
Yeah, and I've seen, like an artist that I follow, Ian Sampson, which has been on the show in the past, has his own Tumblr, and it's really interesting because he puts stuff on there before he puts it on his DeviantArt or his personal gallery, and it's...
Mm-hmm.
And it's great that way, and it's a great way to discover other artists. Tumblr is a great discovery tool as well, and now Yahoo bought it, and it's like, oh, gee, how are they going to screw this up?
It's also a great fan fiction distributor as far as fan art and Rule 34 and Rule 34 and Rule 34.
But as far as discovery, it's not really about this. It really doesn't actually have a lot of discovery. You're basically looking for what you want. And that's why I've always found it hilarious people calling it social media, because it's like, it really isn't social media. It's just basically a really nice way to be able to link to other things though it's its own little internet.
Well, here's the thing.
So it's kind of like, I likened it. The reason I brought up GeoCities is it really is honestly the GeoCities of the day. If you think about it, there you go. Some free space for you to put your website up. And GeoCities even had little tutorials on how to make a website and stuff like that. This is just a little easier.
Well, what I really like about Tumblr is that it's basically Twitter plus. I mean, it does.
Mm-hmm.
I like that you can share and reblog the original thing. And for the most part, it doesn't get as abused as much. I mean, it still gets abused, and you know, people like pretending to pass things off as their own or to get people to go to their website. You know, there's still people doing that, and Tumblr, like Twitter, really doesn't know how to monetize their thing. Twitter's getting more of a handle of it now, but Tumblr really doesn't have a really good way for discovery or monetizing what's existing there, and nobody goes to the main page to see what's trending or whatnot. So I would like to see Yahoo to do something with it, but I'm not gonna hold my breath for it. They're gonna turn into like AOL, where they're gonna own all this shit, and it's like, has AOL owning Huffington Post? Okay, why? AOL also owns Winamp. Okay.
Well, that made sense in 1998. But the thing about Tumblr is, and I don't have a lot of faith, is if you know what just happened to Flickr. They just changed all the accounts. Basically, I don't know the exact number of gigabytes you get, but it
one
used to
terabyte
be
for a free. We get 1 terabyte for a free user now.
Yeah, that's it. But if you're a pro user, you only get 1 terabyte when it used to be unlimited. And there's also like a limit of files that you can upload at a time. They've made it so it's incredibly slow. And if you want any more space, like 2 gig, if you want 2 terabytes, you have to pay $500. And so they've really pissed off their base over there. And them saying now, like with Tumblr saying there's, you know, porn's okay now. They said that, I think they said that in the beginning of Flickr, and then the rules kind of got changed so that it was like, well, it has to be tasteful, and it has our definition of tasteful, and
it's the, a, the old legal definition of what obscene is if, yeah. I'll know a duck when I see it.
Exactly. And that's why, like, I want to hope that this is their, what they're going to do is just forget about it and just leave it. And they just try to find a way to make money on it by putting ads on it. But, I mean, Yahoo has bought a shit ton of stuff over the years. And if you go to Wikipedia and search for Yahoo acquisitions, it's a graveyard.
And the thing is that Kayok brings up a good point is monetization, and the thing is you have to look at other companies about how they monetize on the web, and Yahoo doesn't get it yet. It's like they should be able to do better than what they're doing, and it's all about being as clean as possible. And giving stuff that's relevant to your activity and searches, and some people don't like that. It's like, oh no, you're spying on me, and but at the same time, that people respond better to that. A good example of that is Hulu.
Which they're about to buy.
Yes, well, what Hulu does, and I actually applaud this, is when Hulu is occasionally Hulu will say, hey, would you rather watch a 60-second ad and then watch your whole TV show with no ads after that? I'm like, damn yeah. So, I think that's fantastic, actually. But
oh my God, they're going to spend $600 million on Hulu. So
Hulu's
here's why, because Hulu is dangerous. Because lately, 21st Century Fox, which just got labeled that, and Disney have been fighting over how Hulu should be handled. And there's been some threatening of pulling out. So it is sort of risky to buy it because there might be this issue where if they get it, the contracts might just poof.
And they lose most of their content instantly.
Yeah. Now, this is really smart because this could be like when Netflix got the deal with Stars, which got them access to all the movies. But this also could be dangerous. But yeah, $600 million, so it's worth less than Tumblr?
Yeah, I was wondering.
My God, even if it's a gamble, I would still pay $1 billion for it because, my God. But Tumblr. No, Tumblr. I mean, beautiful pictures of Tom Hiddleston looking up and saying, hello, brother, is much more valuable than, like, say, I don't know, episodes of Family Guy or something like that.
Well, to me, it's and this is actually something that both Netflix and Hulu is working on is their own original content now. Mm-hmm. A good example is if you have a Hulu account, go watch Booth at the End. It is very, very good. It's very Twin Peaks-esque, very, very spooky. I promise you. You know, I enjoyed the hell out of Booth at the End, and I haven't watched it yet. But House of Cards on Netflix, another original. That's the thing. And you're also seeing
Arrested Development.
Yeah,
the whole season.
Yeah, everything is, you know, basically Netflix, Hulu, and YouTube are making their own original content streams, and I think that this is the smartest thing they can do right now because, you know, like I said, people are talking about it, and these are actually really good shows now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's proving that, like, television is really irrelevant, which is hilarious that, you know, Microsoft and the Xbox One, the X-Bone, they're going on about TV, 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 Call of Duty, dog. So, yeah, if you've seen that video, the recap of the X-Bone presentation, that's just basically TV, 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 which... Hey guys, we're watching our stuff online now. TV is irrelevant.
And that's, like I said, that's why I really do think that like I said, these streaming services are becoming content creators now, and we're going to just see better stuff as it goes on, and Hulu needs to really make more original content. And the better it gets, you know, the more refined it gets, the better it's going to get. And I think that this is where we're going to go. And Netflix right now is a paywall service completely. Hulu is a partial paywall, partial ad service. Yeah. And both of them are doing pretty good right now. And YouTube is a completely free service with ads. And now subscription-based modeling, too. So overall, we're seeing here is monetization being done through multiple hybrid means. And I like it. I like where this is going because the cost is a lot smaller than it used to be.
I was actually talking to an Australian yesterday about this. Like, they were talking about, they were amazed that Netflix was so cheap. They were like, how can it be so cheap? And it's like, because if you just take a little bit, people will pay you. Don't gouge them.
Exactly. And another example of this is I love watching Mythbusters. I like to watch Mythbusters as soon as it comes out or the day after it comes out. And I can do that by I go to YouTube and I buy the next episode of Mythbusters for $2.
Yeah. And like, here's the thing. Like, I didn't used to like Mythbusters. I'm going to go ahead and say this. But I watched it recently without the commercials, and I realized it was the commercials all along that was ruining the experience for me.
For Mythbusters?
Because it was just, because it was like, you know, you get like maybe 3-5 minutes of the show, and then it's commercial time.
Well, this is also what I don't like about like TV programming, the way it's set up. It's like almost so many things. It's like, okay, you have the show. Well, okay, this is okay, just don't interrupt me while I go through this is what I observe from when I watch TV. All right, it's the commercial. Intro to the up next, this show. Intro to the show. Commercial. Then the show starts. They go through a little thing, and it's like, all right, we're going to go to commercial. When we come back, this is what you'll see. Commercial. And then the show comes back. This is what we saw last time before we went to the commercial show. This is what we're going to... It's like... You just cut that crap out. And it's like...
Well, another example of this is... there's two examples I want to give of... There's some people that actually say that with traditional television, if you don't watch the commercials, you're stealing the television show. One example is the former head of Warner Brothers. Warner Brothers Television was this fellow named Jamie Kellner. Jamie Kellner said... In an interview, if you get up from your couch to go to the bathroom, you are stealing that television show.
Lol. Well, okay.
Jamie Kellner said that. Another example is a couple of months back, CNET had Best in Show for a tech show, this device by Dish that was called the Sling Box, which lets you has a button that basically is skip commercial. And CBS owned CNET and said, you can't have a skipping commercial device as Best in Show. So the editor-in-chief of CNET quit because he's like, I have journalistic integrity. I'm going to quit.
And a lot of sponsors pulled out, too. They don't want to get involved in like their award show ever again because of this.
Yes.
And it's because the traditional media companies are very terrified and and rightly so, that they are going to lose. And the thing is that, you know, there's this saying, and it's very true. You know, once there weren't any sailing ship companies went out of business as soon as the steamship company showed up.
Exactly. And the thing is, people who say, oh, you have to watch the advertisement, you have to watch the commercials or else you're stealing. The people who are like that are the same people who say, be sure to support your buggy whip company.
Ben, I'm disappointed in you.
Why?
You passed up a great opportunity to make a pun from what Kitty Hawk just said. You could have said, so you're saying that ship has sailed.
No. Oh.
But everyone knows the buggy whip company example.
Well, yeah, but still, it was right there.
There's a great joke there. We missed it.
Well, that is true. But like I said, it's Kitty Hawk is agreeing with me on this. You can't do things the traditional way anymore. You can't shame people into watching commercials. You can't shame. That's the thing. When I read Jamie Kellner's interview where he's shaming people, saying you're stealing a television show if you get to go to the bathroom. Get up, It's like, what are you going to do? There is no contract sign saying I have to watch a commercial.
Dude, you're losing television, like, subscribers to, like, cable and such. I don't think it's time to yell at them. I think it's time to start begging them.
Here, I think I got a proposal, and it's probably something that's been mentioned by many people before. But before I do that, Monty, do you have a comment on this subject?
Well, I'm just... I mean, okay, with the internet, you know, nowadays you have a much greater variety of options as to how you actually want to watch your shows. And, I mean, over the years they've just become so adapted to this method of using commercials that they've started packing in more and more commercials. And so, I mean, people have just gotten sick and they're, you know, it's part of the thing that's driven people to watch things online is just that they don't have to deal with the ads. And so really... the only smart way to have to deal with this at this point is just, you know, I mean, there's still product placement. I mean, that's a traditional form of advertising that's been around for decades at this point. And in terms of advertising, that's the one thing they can really lean on at this point, because just having, you know, all the ads, people are just sick of it. And they don't have to put up with it anymore.
Well, I don't think it's really about being sick about ads. I think it's really about watching it on demand, because I think people watch Hulu with the ads and they're fine with that.
Part of it is Hulu's ads are a lot less invasive versus the TV experience because it's 30 seconds of ads, and 30 seconds of ads versus a minute of ads. You can still watch it. And another example of this is basically also the thing is this. I actually have ad block on my computer, and I go on YouTube, and I never get ads on YouTube because of my ad block.
Okay,
I turned
it off.
I do the same thing.
I actually want to get in.
I turned it off on Hulu because I'd rather have some background noise versus Hulu showing the 30-second shame screen.
Well, here in Australia, at least, we don't get as many ads, so I'm actually happy about that. But I think it's not really the ads, because I think that's what's actually made me think that it's mostly the on-demand. Because there's still ads, and it's still annoying, even with as few ads as we have here. And like on the government channels, they don't have ads, really. So I think it really just is the on-demand thing that people are more into.
Right.
Yeah, because I can watch 14 episodes of Arrested Development at a time instead of... oh, I hope they're going to have a marathon.
Yeah,
exactly.
So I want to get in here before we end this, because we've been going on really long for this. and here's the thing: was like there's a lot of like TV shows out there. Yeah, they could try to like make them all ahead of time and then put them on like an on demand thing later, or you can be a part of it as it comes out when it does, and then you watch it, like, you know, when you want to the new Doctor Who is coming out, you want to watch that when it comes out. And you don't want to have to piecemeal pay for everything. I refuse to piecemeal pay for something that I don't actually own. That's a different argument. But what I would like to see, if the cable companies have any chance of competing, sell us channels individually. If you can't sell us shows...
they'll never do that.
Actually,
I would pay.
There is some talk about this. There is some talk.
I would pay for several channels.
They're actually talking about doing this because they are so terrified of losing subscribers. There has been talk, like I think Dish was actually talking about doing a la carte because they're having their ass handed to them.
They are
really doing badly. So what I think they're trying to do is they're trying to do innovative stuff because they know we have to.
You mean the stuff that everybody's already asking for. Nobody wants to pay 80. Nobody wants to...
The a la carte option is the way to go, but the thing about it is I think that's basically just stalling the inevitable.
Yeah.
Because it's just, I mean, as online content is gaining more traction, I mean, first it started out with, you know, cheap little webcomics, and now it's working its way to web series. I mean, the production of the content, I mean, the quality of the content being produced for online exclusive is going to keep getting better and better and better. And, I mean, the price of everything online gets reduced to free. And so it's just, you're going to see this a la carte thing happen at some point. But in the end, I think the cable companies are ultimately going to be pushed out. But it's just kind of a question of how many decades is that going to take? Well, are we talking 10 years, 20, 30?
They're trying to entrench themselves in now, right now, with stuff like with the cybersecurity stuff. and they're trying to play ball with the government in order to entrench themselves in. So we'll see how well that
goes. They want to at least provide the pipeline for you.
Yeah.
We gotta cut this off.
Anyway.
This has gone on for quite a long time, and I'm pretty sure this conversation is not over. But we do have a little bit of time left. We have a couple more things we want to mention. Ben, you've used Google Wallet for a while now, but I've only just seen they started advertising it as an alternative to send money to people.
Google Wallet is more than just a way to send email money to people. That's a very recent addition to the Google Wallet arsenal. Google Wallet started as an NFC payment system, and the reason why I signed up for it was because Google gave me $20 to sign up for it. And basically, I have an NFC phone. I've always had one for the last 2 years.
Wait, what is that?
NFC is a near field communication. Basically, my phone can emit a signal that lets me pay for things without using a credit card.
This has been used in other countries for many years.
For years, in Korea and Japan, you can buy
Australia.
Bus tickets, plane tickets, you can buy tolls and stuff. You just tap your phone on the surfaces and pay.
We're a little behind the times here.
Yeah, and, it's wonderful.
And the thing is, I have a Nexus 4 right now, but before that I had a Galaxy Nexus, and I have Google Wallet on both those phones, and all I do is I just walk up to let's say I go to McDonald's, I tap my phone and I pay, and people, every time I do that, people are like, "Oh, how'd you do that? What kind of phone is that? How'd you do that?"
This is actually a plot point in East of Eden, or that anime that came out a while back. He was in America and he couldn't use his phone. He had like $1 billion on it, but he couldn't use it because he was in the U.S.
Exactly. But the point is Google Wallet started as a way to store gift cards, credit cards, prepaid cards, and have money on it. And basically where you have one less thing, you don't need a credit card, you just have your phone. But it later evolved to where now it is almost a PayPal competitor, where you could actually, when you create an email and you're composing it in Gmail, you could actually say, I want to send money through Gmail to Kitty Hawk. I want to send $50 to Kitty Hawk through Gmail. And Kitty Hawk doesn't need to have a Gmail account to get that money.
No, you can actually sign up for an account. Now, I have looked into this, and it isn't something quite that like a webcomic artist or anybody can use yet, because here's why. So how it works is, for the user, is they can actually email each other money, and this is pretty good. There's no fees unless you use a credit card. Now, why isn't it good for webcomic artists? Well, here we go. There really isn't a way to sell physical goods. They're actually kicking everyone who was selling physical goods through Google Commerce, well, Google Checkout. They're kicking them all off to other services like Shopify and Braintree. The reason is because they don't want to handle the credit card transactions for these people anymore. They want them to go do it elsewhere. Now, what you can do is that you can link Google Wallet to your credit card processor and have them do it for you. But that they're not really handling anything for you, so I don't really understand why you would use Google Wallet, since you could just use PayPal, and people can use credit cards for that. Now, the other thing is that, and this was true with Google Checkout, Google doesn't pay you immediately. Google waits to pay you. And with Google Checkout, this, for some people, could be months or never. Because the reason is because, and this works with AdSense as well, because I used to do AdSense, they wait until you have a certain amount of money in your account, and then they cut you a check. The reason is because they want to make interest off your money. And with Google Wallet, though, they're promising that they'll pay you once a month. So it would be harder to get your money with Google Wallet. And this is only for digital goods. And I think you have to do it through Play. I didn't really get that far into it.
You do.
But okay, so in my opinion, this is a nice start, Google, but like PayPal is much better at this right now.
PayPal is a much older service, but the thing is, don't ever underestimate Google.
No, I don't underestimate them. But if you're gonna release something, it's like okay, bear with me. This is like G+. G+ came out much more gimped than Facebook. Now there are more options now, but when your idea is to compete against someone, you don't come out with an inferior product and say, I'm here to sell. Yeah, exactly. But it's just that this isn't quite there yet. This is nice. The emailing the money is kind of interesting. However, when I read up on it, it's actually, if someone pays you through their bank account, it takes a while to get the money. It also takes a while to get into your bank account than it does with PayPal. So it's still, again, they haven't really stepped up to the plate. So
for being Google,
just a way to deliver money from one person to another, this is actually a very creative way of doing it via Gmail.
But PayPal can do it without fees between people now. So I don't understand. This is just basically what this is they came out with an inferior product. I don't care that this is new. If you're competing against someone, you don't bring out like, Apple has a new phone with a touchscreen. We're going to bring out a phone with a keypad.
Okay. I think
I'm not one of them, but some people are still sticklers of I need physical keys.
Well, no, I'm just pointing out that this is like,
okay.
They didn't go far.
I think I have it.
Yeah.
Wait.
Interesting, and maybe it'll grow, but for now,
Kitty Hawk,
I'm stuck with PayPal. Sorry.
No,
they get hacked.
Ben, no, I think I have it figured out. If any other company had this, it'd be an interesting first toe step into the water of trying to be something towards what PayPal is. This is Google. When I first saw this, I expected something at PayPal level. This is incredibly subpar for Google.
Google is famous for doing open betas. Google is famous for this.
Oh, you're saying
this is not an open beta?
This is an actual product. This is out.
Well, every Google product is an open beta.
Then the word meaning of the word beta has totally lost all meaning.
It has. But Google has always admitted, you know, they always love the beta title, and like I said, they always add new services, new features at lightning speed. I'm a pretty big user of Google services. I use Google. I use Gmail to do lots of things. Gmail is one of the four tabs I always have pinned in my Chrome.
Google is.
I can make phone calls to people for free using Gmail. I can.
How old is Gmail? Gmail is 9 years old, and the thing is that this is a this is a nice first attempt. But hi, you're Google.
Yeah.
You are one of the most profitable, biggest companies on earth.
And you couldn't come up with something better. It's like here, if I look at Square. Creators love Square, and then PayPal, like a year later, tries to come out and is like, "Yeah, I have a PayPal Go thing or whatever. I have the reader because I got one free. I don't really care. I'm not going to use the PayPal. I'm really not because
I can't use it. I mean, I can't use it here in Australia. Even though like I had an American PayPal account,
mm-hmm.
It said, "I'm sorry, you're in Australia. Even though you're an American and have an American account, you can't use it." And I was like, fuck you.
Can you use Square?
You have to spoof a GPS.
I'm not going to do that because that's just stupid.
You don't want to do that with PayPal because then they'll just, you don't get your money anymore.
And it's not available here yet. So I'm like, well.
What you need to do is build a Faraday cage and have a GPS spoofer inside. And just every time you want to use it, you just step into the Faraday cage. And
No. Because then it says, I'm going to wait. Faster. Yeah, I'm not going to do that. But PayPal is notorious for closing down accounts, so I don't want to incur their wrath.
But my way, you get to build a Faraday cage. Those are fun to build.
All right,
I can build one anyway.
Moving on. Monty, you speaking of PayPal.
Oh yeah, this. Okay, so Monty. PayPal apparently. Okay, so speaking of PayPal, PayPal did a stupid thing, and I'll just do this quick.
Okay.
So PayPal has this bug hunt program where basically they pay people to find bugs, and then they'll pay you a bounty when you find one. So this kid found a cross-site scripting. I think that's what it was. Let me look and see the exact wording because I don't want to sound stupid. Okay, so basically a cross-site scripting vulnerability, which, you know, that's usually with PHP and stuff like that. The way it works is that you have another window open and the website can basically hijack PayPal if you have that open in another window. So he turns this into PayPal, and PayPal finds out he's a 17-year-old kid and says, sorry, you're under 18, we're not going to pay you. So he says, okay, that's great. I'm releasing it into the wild. So for a while, I think it might have been fixed, but for a while, don't go to PayPal if you have other windows or tabs open, and for no reason ever use Internet Explorer because it runs in the background of Windows, so it could be checking something, and you don't want to get pwned.
You should never use Internet Explorer at all, chances you get.
But I'm just pointing out that don't use it. So basically, this is a case of, as a pen tester I know said, too young to get the bounty, but not too young to go to jail. So I don't think he's going to go to jail, but this is basically a case of he couldn't get the money because he was too young, even though he was qualified enough to get it. Now, Google has a different program, this is real quick, where if you're under 18, they basically give it to your parents. So that's a little better.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, so if you're a PayPal user out there, kind of be careful for a while. Yeah.
All right. And our last bit, Monty had found this earlier. Why don't you go ahead and finish off?
Okay, and so let's see. I believe this would be in reference to the online comic books, well, the comic book service, which is trying to be like Netflix. Let me check the doc here.
Yep, called Fangrabs at fangrabs.com.
Oh my god, they have Comic Sans on their page.
Oh my god!
It's already a questionable website.
Yes. Is it by a 40-year-old office lady?
Oh my god, it's everywhere.
Bad website design, dated idea. I mean, with Comixology and all these other digital distributors out, you know, the fact that they're trying to, you know, have people pay for, you know, the handling of physical copies. It just seems like an idea that's over a decade behind the times.
Ooh, Roxy Rangers.
Hi, is it 1996?
I don't know. It could be. I mean, it's in Comic Sans, so I wouldn't trust the site at all.
No, this site is atrocious. It's not even designed for a. Oh wow, they actually list their phone number on it. This must be like five guys.
Yeah. So there's a okay. So you. Pay,
It's not even an 800 number.
So they send you books, like physical books.
Physical books.
Or is it okay?
As low as $15 a month. I mean, I think in theory it's interesting. I'd like to think that this is actually some store somewhere that is on the verge of going out of business.
Well, maybe I think it's
owned by a guy named John because there's a link called John's Choice Grabs. It is. This is all by one guy named John.
Yeah, it could be John's Choice Grabs is maybe his storefront. I don't know.
Hi, I am John. I am the owner of FineGrabs.com. I have some favorite. Let me put this in the chat because I found the about page.
Yeah. So his taste is questionable because he has 52 on here, but at the same time he does have Adventure Time. So I'm kind of like a little.
It sounds like he has a comic book store, and he has a whole bunch of graphic novels he can't get rid of. So he's decided to try to do this like subscription plan.
Unfortunately, he has the Avengers Disassembled as his favorite picks. Yeah, his taste is shit.
Well, regardless of your opinion,
maybe. Oh, I got it. I know what his taste is. I have too many of these.
I mean, is there really any viability to this business model at this point, especially with all the digital distributors out there? I'm not thinking so.
Well, then again, all the digital distributors. You have a weird accent, Monty. I don't know what it is. The way you say a couple of words, it's screwing me up. But that
industry.
It's fine though. Everybody has their thing. But
I knew one guy once that said Amazon instead of Amazon.
Weird.
Amazon.
There's no. All right. But when you have like Comixology, you don't actually own that stuff anyway. So you're essentially pissing money because it can go at any point. I mean, if you want to actually have. I mean, this is a low tech alternative. I would not put it past this actually having a market out there, a niche market, probably, but I still think it has some potential. Not a fan of the website, though. But
the shipping costs are going to continue to keep going up. And if I'm going to go ahead and be political, but if like Congress has their way and they dismantle the post office, they will go up again. So shipping physical goods at this point seems like a really bad thing.
They don't go through the post office.
It's like going backwards. I mean, you have the internet and you're going backwards.
Kitty Hawk.
And people who like books, seriously, they're going to buy them. They don't, or if they really want to like rent them, a lot of libraries now have a selection of comic books and manga. So,
well, there you go.
There you go.
But also, Kitty Hawk, Diamond doesn't. I don't think Diamond uses USPS. They use like UPS.
And well, no. What I'm pointing out for him, not for the big guys.
Oh,
I'm talking
okay.
for him because like to get one of those contracts with UPS is fucking expensive.
It is.
So I mean that's why I'm saying like this is really a bad time to be getting into physical goods because even here in Australia the prices of like shipping is going up. So it's getting prohibitive. So, yeah. You know, that's part of the reason I've been looking into like doing more digital things because physical goods, unfortunately, are just cost prohibitive.
Exactly. And every time I commission an artist, they always say, so do you want me to send you the original? I'm like, no, I'm fine with it. And some of them are even like, oh, there's no extra charge. I'm like, no, because I don't want them to start bleeding money sending me originals.
Now, it's fortunately still cheap enough, but like I said, I wouldn't, like, at this point, like, when I started, it was a lot cheaper sending physical goods, but now I'm sort of like, no.
I'm perfectly okay with just digital copies.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's better anyway, because you're going to look at the physical one and just put it in a box anyway.
No.
Yeah, digital one, I'll look at anytime I want to.
Exactly.
And keep in mind, these are rentals. They're not, you know, right. I mean...
Yeah.
What happens when you tear a page or you smudge something
You bought it. All right. So that is we got to end this. we're at the end of this show. There are a couple more pieces we didn't get to, and I'm not going to bring them up because I don't want to take more time. Well, I'll bring them up. One is about Chainsaw Suit podcast. And another is a link to Amy's Baking Company and lessons learned through social media. You can find those links on our website at webcomicbeacon.com. This has been the newscast for May 28th, 2013 for Webcomic Beacon. And once again, I want to thank Ben Carver from Animation Aficionados.
Thank you.
Kitty Hawk from Sparkling Generation Valkyrie Yuki.
Thanks for having me. Sparkling Generation Valkyrie Yuki, SGBY.com. Sexy fun. You'll love it.
And Monty Rode from his DeviantArt page, which we're going to be linking in the show notes. Thanks for coming on the show.
I wish I could follow up that snappy line.
Oh,
and we love Monty Rode.
Monty!
And coming up in maybe one or two episodes, we're actually going to be doing a whole episode looking at the Strip Search web series. And so go ahead and look forward to that. I've been Fess, and this is Webcomic Beacon at webcomicbeacon.com.
Yeah, I'm actually surprised, Fest, that you had an anti you know, an anti-commercial stance.
What do you mean?
Because I always figured that you were very pro ads.
When did I say anti-commercial?
When we were talking about the whole commercialization advertising thing, you came very anti. You seemed very anti-traditional advertisement. I always thought you were more pro.
No, I never actually got a chance to comment on the actual commercials part. I have no problem with. It's mostly you and Kitty Hawk talking about it. I have no problem with sitting through a commercial at the beginning.
So do you think that if you get up from the couch, you're stealing that TV show?
No, that's really dumb. I would like to see less.
I think people should kick down the door and rip you off.
You want to actually, I have the Jamie Kellner interview right here.
No, I don't have a problem with because advertising is how people get money for things that they do. You can have the ads be not as annoying and not as intrusive as in every freaking 7 minutes,
well,
you know, like on show.
Are,
but
actually, ads might not be as effective as we think. It is a nice way to make some revenue.
It's
but
because
I wouldn't
they're
say,
everywhere. Like, it's because if they would trim down the amount of advertisements and then up the cost of those advertisements. You know, instead we could have, because it's like where we tune out is because there's so goddamn many, so we don't pay attention.
The problem is that they're not targeted as well. Like on Facebook, they seem a lot more targeted.
That too.
Kitty Hawk is absolutely right. They need better They need to use the metrics they have versus just shots in the dark. That's the biggest problem. If you do shots in the dark advertising, you're going to do shit advertising that everyone's going to hate. If you have the metrics to do good targeted ads, you have less people annoyed by the ads because some people actually enjoy seeing certain ads. Like one of my favorite ads, I already have Geico, so I don't care one way or another. But one of my favorite ads for Geico is when they have this defense basketball player smacking things away every time someone tries to throw something somewhere. He's like, no, not in my house. And I think everyone knows this commercial.
Yeah, I think I've seen that. But yeah, like,
I fucking love that commercial. I watch it every time I can because I basically said to Hulu, I like Geico commercials.
Well, and the thing is like Google, like when you're searching for something on Google, oftentimes it will come up with relevant ads, and that actually is, I will click those because I'm like, okay, I'm looking for business cards.
I have no problem with those.
There's business cards.
I have no problem with properly targeted ads because if I'm actually wanting something, yeah, that helps a lot if I see something that's on sale or whatever. But
what I hate is when someone tries to spam you with ads. Like a good example is just for curiosity's sake, I went to Red Letter Media a couple days ago, and I turned ad block off Blip for just a second. And there's like a pre-roll ad, and then there's pop-up ads during the video. And it's like it got so fucking annoying. I'm like, okay, experiment over. Back on.
As far as the Blip ads, I'm fine with the front running commercial, the mid-roll. Is okay. I wish it were just one commercial, not two. And the after all, I don't really care about the ones. And this is on YouTube too. The ones I really hate are the pop up ads that just pop
exactly.
up and they get in the way. That
the,
I don't
the thing
like.
Is I've heard that you can actually still. I've actually heard that people with Blip accounts can actually set how many commercials are in the video.
That's pretty cool.
When you have a Blip account, you can set if you want the. No, you can't. Everybody gets the beginning now. That's Blip's rule.
Well, everyone gets the beginning. I'm okay with the beginning.
The mid roll you can elect in the after the video's over, you can elect in which. Who cares? A lot of people just click off anyway if they don't want
to
watch it.
I know, but when you get to that point,
they can select the mid roll.
Exactly. If you basically said, "Hey, I want all the ads to display," then you're basically saying, "Ha ha ha! I want to be worse than Hulu."
Well, that's their choice. I mean, I hate it, and I'd much rather they wouldn't. But you know, I understand that ads also pay for the content there. I'm not going to bitch too much now. It would be nice if I might even buy a subscription thing to make the ads go away if Blip had an option, because I watch enough series.
They are restructuring, so that might actually
come true. Well, Blip is actually in a lot of financial problems right now.
Well, that's part of the reason they're restructuring. And also part of it is that everyone's getting on this, like, let's make IP bandwagon, because they realize the big companies are kind of struggling to get into the digital market. And it would be good to have your own IP so that you can say, hey, I've got this, and not have to rely on the traditional media anymore.
Yeah,
so
I think exactly. Exactly. Like we were saying earlier on the show about how they're making shows like Booth at the End and House of Cards. You know,
I was amazed that Arrested Development, excuse me, they put all 14 episodes up at once. And I think that was really smart of them to do, because then you can get all your hyper fans on the first day out of the way. And then, you know, it sort of has tails off until you release another 14 episodes.
Exactly. You get the people who want it now, and you also allow for later discovery.
Yeah,
you don't lose the layer discovery. That's the thing. And like I said, it's a, you know, like I said, I am not a believer in Blip, because I think they're making all the wrong decisions right now. And I'm not seeing anything showing me to the contrary. It's like, because their web rank went from under 2000 being, you know, most viewed websites in the world, to over 5,000 in a year. Any other web company that had that kind of drop would not even exist.
Ranking is one thing. It's really about, like, are you profitable? If you are like spending money, like if you're a web comic and you're doing it for fun, that's one thing. But like if you're a big company and you're not profitable, something is very wrong with you. Which is why Tumblr was like so weird, because they never made a profit. They just kept getting investments. And that's why it was always like expected that what it was going to do was either start an IPO or get bought out by someone.
Well, exactly.
That's what I think Blip wants to do.
Well,
Blip,
Kitty,
I think,
Kitty,
wants to get
Kitty
bought.
Hawk, Kitty Hawk, the thing with Tumblr, actually... they did start doing some monetization where you basically can buy almost like kind of like eBay, where you can like buy extra things to make your post stick at the top, or you can all these other sort of things to make you stand out, which can certainly work. And then I also started noticing like Twitter, where they have like sponsored tweets. There's like sponsored Tumblr posts, like I've gotten some from AT&T and GE that have popped up. And actually, and this is really impressive, especially the GE ones, they're actually paying attention to how Tumblr actually works. And when they post something, it's like some sort of, it's like a GIF set or an animated GIF, where it's like in the style. It's like, so it's interesting, it's cool. Ah, you also see it. So it's like, it's seamless incorporation. They've been working on, which has been pretty good so far. As far as like the Blip thing, because I did want to get into that, I do watch several web series on Blip, and I do know, and also have the first issue is on Blip as well. And
but you want to move it? I remember recently you were asking about moving it.
I was moving it because I wasn't sure if first issue still counted. Far as, because they were going through, I think they're going through a purge. They're saying Blip is not for your Let's Plays. It's not for your, hey, it's me, I want to make a statement about something. You know, all that shit, that's for YouTube. Blip wants to focus on originally produced content and series and things like that, which is fine, because also that takes up a lot of bandwidth to have your shitty Let's Play, or you just playing the game and you're not really adding any, you know, I think it's totally fine if they want to make, they want to judge what's on there or not. And that's fine.
Okay.
Because YouTube has that crap covered. There's plenty of crap on YouTube.
And Nintendo gets that money instead.
Here's what y'all aren't thinking about. You're not thinking about the market part. See, the deal with Tumblr was, the idea behind Tumblr was, and they only monetized recently, was because they expected that they would get bought out. Or they would go IPO, kind of like Zynga and Facebook, and that's what they were hoping for. But what happened is the market crashed, and the other thing is that the IPO of Facebook did not do as well as they expected.
Well, actually, the IPO of Facebook was a scam.
Yes, but that's what I'm pointing out. What I'm pointing out is that they couldn't go that route anymore, so they had to go the sell route. So what Blip is doing is they're trying to pose themselves to get some IP, What they want is they want all this IP so that they can then say to another, a larger company, hey, look at all this IP we have that isn't tied up in someone else's IP, because Let's Plays and such like that are tied up into other IP, and that's not good.
That's fair enough, but I still will contend that, you know, Blip's original mission was basically what they're doing now. They just let too much crap in, and to be honest, they are.
They needed content.
Yeah, they're saving. They're also saving a lot of money by getting rid of a lot of this crap. They don't have to store it. Yeah, they don't have to. No, they don't have to store it anymore. They don't have
to. Talk fast.
Okay, look, storing is not the issue. What this is really about is cleaning up so that they can sell themselves, because here's the thing, they'll sell the image.
They're trying to do an image.
If you're agreeing with me that they let in all these Let's Plays because they needed content, then it's a fucking dick move to then kick them off as soon as
I never said that.
Okay, but then I will say this: it is a dick move to kick the people who made you big off. If you're going to say that now we've used you to get big enough, thanks.
No, they're not. They're not kicking those people off. They're kicking the people off that are just the people that only should exist on YouTube, the ones with nothing really good to offer that are just taking up space.
Define good to offer.
Exactly.
I'm going to tell you. It's all like, okay, you see, okay, here's the classic YouTube crap. The sort of low quality, low rent video cap of Let's Plays, or just ranting about this or that with like no, it's basically open commenting with a video in front of you. You're not writing anything. You're not scripting anything. It's just you and you're talking. You know, that sort of
people like that.
That's YouTube. That's YouTube already.
They wanted
Blip wanted original series from the get go.
Yeah, I know that. But I'm just pointing out that why would you kick the people that made you?
They're not kicking off.
You could start saying things.
They're not kicking people off that made them big. They're kicking off the people that aren't contributing anything of worth.
They actually had their stuff on the site. People came to see it. I mean, if
Kitty Hawk is right. This goes into the whole.
It's a numbers game.
I know a duck when I hear it.
You're falling into the argument of. There are standards. Who fucking cares about standards? If someone likes a show about someone rambling about a game for an hour, well, who's to say that's crap?
The people that are hosting your content and you're not paying them to host it.
I'm great. That's called gatekeeping, dude.
Yeah,
if you want to gatekeep, that's fine. And then you'll notice that everybody leaves.
Not everybody's not leaving.
Or
if you're big enough, you can go to Springboard. But if most people are not
Springboard,
yeah, I mean, really. But I'm just pointing out, like, this is kind of a dick move to say, "Hey, you can come in, please help us."
Yeah, but
we don't have any content, and then once you've got content, you're like, "Get the fuck off."
Blip makes their money through the advertisements, as well as the creators that submit stuff make their money through the advertisements.
Yeah,
they're not making. They don't the people that are buying ad space are not going to be wanting their ads on the chaff, let's say.
Then what they should do is have a way for selecting what you advertise on. Most of those are general advertising anyway.
One last thing. There was also a previously, it's not necessarily a gatekeeping thing, but there was originally a second step process. Yes, anyone could sign up for an account, but to get like a custom page and all of that and everything and other extra options, you actually had to be personally vetted by somebody on the
Blip staff. So it is gatekeeping, kind of like Keenspot used to be.
It was originally like that. First issue eventually did get approved for our content. And so we're sort of more or less grandfathered in.
But I'm just pointing out that, like, I was even offered, like, a contract for Keenspot. So, and let's
expose them.
I don't want to talk about it, but basically, it's they offered me it, and it was basically gatekeeping. They only let the people they wanted in. So, I mean.
So, are you. But I would contend. What's wrong with gatekeeping?
I think it's basically like saying, this is the content that we only want to present. While that's okay, I don't think that that's what they did. They, for a while, were not gatekeeping and allowing the users to decide what they want to watch rather than Blip decides who what they want them to watch. Like, you, the reason YouTube is so popular is because it isn't like someone telling you, you're going to like this show. You can exactly. go on there and find what you want to watch.
Anyone can put almost anything on YouTube. And a good example of this is Epic Mealtime.
Mm-hmm.
Epic Mealtime is now actually a profitable thing. Those guys are making money by doing cooking contests where they get two professional chefs having to cook out of a briefcase of bacon.
Okay, or like Pinky Show. Pinky Show is one of my favorite things.
PewDiePie.
Pinky Show is about this little cat. It's a little cat who talks about social issues. And the thing is that would never, ever fucking get on like a controlled network because they'd look at them and go, this is very communist and exactly. wouldn't allow it on. But because there's no gatekeeping with YouTube, they're able to publish. And actually, I discovered Pinky Show through YouTube, and I've even bought a shirt from the Pinky Show because I really like it. So I now own a Pinky Show shirt, and I gave some money to the creators.
Yeah,
but I've never found them.
That's still original content. But
what I'm pointing out is that when you start to say this is good and this is not good, that is called gatekeeping because you are basically deciding what gets put inside the gate and what gets shoved outside the gate.
And when you're gatekeeping, you may not be able to accurately guess your audience's taste.
And Kitty Hawk is absolutely right, because sometimes gatekeeping is a terrible idea. Because let me give you an example that this actually was on television. Anthony Bourdain is a chef. He wrote this book called Kitchen Confidential, which like exploded in the late 80s, early 90s about what it's really like to cook in a professional 4-star kitchen. And Anthony Bourdain went to the head of Food Network and said, I have an idea for a show where I go to different locations and I have an adventure and I eat some of the food and talk about the local cuisine. The head of Food Network said, this is a terrible idea. No one will watch this. So that's gatekeeping right there. Anthony Bourdain went to Travel Channel, pitched the same thing, and that's how he got no reservations.
And because that was what they wanted. And the thing is that's how the method has been for many, many, many years. And with the advent of the internet, let's all be honest here. We honestly would not be here talking together if it weren't for the internet. Like,
exactly.
Can you imagine Webcomics Beacon being broadcast on like CBS or NBC Radio? I don't think they would allow it.
Exactly. Oh, like I said,
I could dream.
If what you're relying on is for someone up ahead to make the decision of whether or not you're good enough for their site, it's exact same thing as what happened with Anthony Bourdain and no reservations. Imagine if YouTube had a committee that said, you know what, PewDiePie, I don't get it, so it's not going on because
yeah.
I don't get it.
Or like a Sam and Max. Sam and Max was like a indie comic.
Oh,
for
yeah,
so
no
long.
One, no one would get Sam and Max.
Yeah, like Sam and Max was just sort of an underground sort of thing, and the only reason that it got picked was it was picked up by LucasArts and turned into a game.
Because Tim Schafer got it.
Yeah. I mean, like, the thing is that it's just that people want to believe that it's good to select what's good for people. And, like, that's because it's safe. It's safe to allow people to choose what's good for you.
It's
because
safe,
yeah.
It's homogenized. You're going by Nielsen ratings and all this
exactly.
shit.
And, like, the thing is that it's hard to it's just... I would rather have the freedom to decide what I want to watch rather than have someone else decide.
I agree. I would rather do a search and find and separate the wheat from the chaff myself versus relying on a bunch of people sitting in a room deciding, okay, they will only get this. Let them eat cake.
I hope you like Britney Spears because it's Britney Spears.
Yes, Kitty Hawk, you're absolutely right. And like I said, that's why I like the internet, because that's especially like YouTube, because here's a good example. YouTube last December did Rewind YouTube video, which was basically all of the best YouTube guys together in this mashup under under Gangnam Style. Mm-hmm. And I saw lots of people I've never seen before, and I'm like, hey, you know, this sounds interesting. So I started looking these people up, and lots of these people are pretty funny. And that's the whole idea of YouTube is discovery.
Mm-hmm.
And if
you don't have that, then we're going to go back to how things used to be when we would just say, I wonder what's on TV. I hope it's something good.
Oh, it's Walker, Texas Ranger.
Fuck.
All right.
I guess I'll watch headline news for the next few hours, because at least the smiling face of Chuck Roberts will calm my heart.
All right. I got the blip facts, just so I can tell you just officially, so it wasn't just me just rambling out of my head.
Okay, go ahead.
You get half a cent for an ad.
So, actually, no, it's 50% of... You get 50%, Blip gets 50%. I know that.
You get half a cent.
Here's a question. Why is my show not on the new Blip? At Blip, our goal is to help viewers...
Put this fact on the chat, because I want to read this too.
Oh, hang on. All right. All right, so why is my show not on the new Blip? At Blip, our goal is to help viewers discover the best original web series. If you're unable to find videos you previously uploaded to Blip using your search, blah, blah, blah. So there's sort of the transition here. I'm going down to a review.
Wow, this site, tech site, is slow as shit.
I didn't have any problem.
We couldn't understand what your show is about. What the fuck? If that were true, like, that's right there. I'm sorry. Like, yeah, anything else that they say, I'm just,
it's bullshit.
It's bullshit, because, like, that's like saying, like, if I had a show about, like, I don't know, like,
farting on peanut butter.
Like, but I'm just pointing out, like, this is just stupid, because
these are the kind of people that will say, that
I don't understand hula hoops.
All right, this is the part I wanted to mention.
Okay, go ahead.
Reviewer content concluded that it is not an original episodic web series. That is what they're going for, and that's fine, because that is what they're trying to do. But right here it says, if your videos are not part of an original, high-quality, episodic web series, then Blip is likely not the best place for you, unfortunately. We are not set up for one-off, quote-unquote, viral videos, promo demos, webinars, portfolios, reels, sermons, raw video game footage, lectures, Let's Play, and, quote, review shows that do not have a significant amount of original content, or videos that you're looking just to share with your friends and family. So,
that's just
see,
YouTube. And they just describe YouTube.
Yeah, everything they just described, there's a spot for that. It's YouTube.
Let me tell you a story first.
But here's, hold on, one thing before you tell the story. The part about review shows that do not contain a significant amount of original content, that's sort of arbitrary. But I am going to go harp on the, we couldn't understand what your show is about. That right there gives them leeway to basically get rid of any show that they just don't agree with.
Exactly.
I think they're talking about more the avant-garde stuff, or the people, or the
no,
one of the artists.
Because when you say, I didn't understand what your show is about, that's like saying, I can't recall. It's basically giving yourself enough leeway to say, I can do whatever I want, and I can kick you off if I don't like your stuff.
It's also the line,
our goal is to help viewers discover the best in original web series. That right there is gatekeeping.
Exactly.
It's also a private company. They can do whatever they want.
Yeah, they can, but that's basically the nail in the coffin.
And we're allowed to call them out on it. That's the thing. They're allowed to do it. We're allowed to call them out. But
and I disagree with you.
They differentiate themselves from YouTube, though.
Yeah, they need to
differentiate. Let me tell you a story about this young man. His name was Lucas Cruikshank. He did this video where he spoke, where he sped up his voice and acted like an 8-year-old. And no one got it. No one understood it until all of a sudden it became the number one channel on YouTube. And then Nickelodeon offered him a show and 3 movies. I'm talking about Fred.
What the hell is Fred?
It's on Nickelodeon.
What the hell is Fred?
You don't know about Fred?
No.
It's Fred.
I never heard of it.
Hi, I'm Fred. I need my meds.
No.
You never seen Fred?
No.
Oh. Well, you need to.
Speaking of which, I am impressed that Annoying Orange has a Nickelodeon TV show, since we're on the topic.
Exactly the same thing.
You too.
Blip would not get it. Blip would look at annoying.
I'm pretty sure Blip would have annoying orange on their channels.
No, they wouldn't.
I am pretty
probably
damn
not,
sure they
because
would.
Because they'd probably be like, "This is viral." Because they even mentioned viral, and they
exactly. It's episodic.
Anything you want.
It is clearly
so basically
episodic.
What this sounds like is they're trying to be like they're trying to go the way of Netflix. Well, I'm sorry. Netflix has much more, a lot more money than you is going to kick your ass in this field. Seriously, if you want to be like a competitor to YouTube or Netflix, why don't you go in this direction of we publish the stuff that YouTube doesn't? And you probably would end up being more profitable. Now, you probably have to host outside
but
the United States.
Everything.
You probably have a shit ton of porn, but you know what? More people will watch you.
I mean, yeah. Hell yeah. Porn,
dude.
I'm going to go watch a porn.
Here's another thing. So I've been told this is secondhand knowledge. YouTube's ads don't pay as much as Blip ads, apparently. So
but
that's
the same
that's
thing
also
is
a consideration
YouTube,
for creators.
But the thing is this, you can click the monetize my video button.
Yeah, it doesn't
and you don't
pay
get
as
much money doing that. But the thing though is you with YouTube you have to actually like kind of prove yourself. You can put anything up there. That's the beauty. You can put anything up there, and as long as you just put stuff up there, it doesn't matter.
Okay.
If you click that monetize thing, you might get like 5 pennies a year. But
yeah.
But if you do something like Fred and it takes off and you're number one, or if you do Gangnam Style, then all of a sudden, you know, 5 pennies becomes $5,000,
okay.
$10,000.
But that's very rare. But what I would point out is if you're really actually looking to monetize your video series, you really feel that you can make some money off of it, like going with a service is never a good idea because basically you can get fucked, like in the case
exactly.
of Blip. And so that's why you need to invest in a server and do it yourself. And
exactly.
Oh, I'll have to pay for bandwidth. But if you're big enough that you're starting to say, hey, these bastards are taking a big cut of my money. Maybe it's time to start saying it's time for me to invest in a server, which is, you know, basically what happens with webcomics, too.
Exactly.
Eventually,
you're 100% right, Kitty Hawk. That's exactly yeah. right. Privately hosted webcomics are not a new thing. People have always been doing that. As
okay.
soon as they decide that they wanted to be more professional than Comic Genesis or Drunk Duck Site.
You're missing a key element here, and that is also trying to figure out how to make your basically create your own player and to sell advertising.
What the fuck are you talking
you're,
about?
Okay.
This?
You
dude,
have
that
to.
That's free.
You, yeah, that's free. There's all sorts of free shit to
yes,
do
there's,
that.
Yes, there's a player, you guys. But I'm talking about to be able to integrate it and put advertisement videos into it, as well as to sell people to buy advertisement places.
That's all free.
You can do this.
What do you mean
okay,
it's free? You have to go and court people to advertise on your site.
No,
when you have
you
a,
do not.
Yes,
you just go get an ad service. Like there's
that's what Blip is. Blip is an ad service and a host.
No, what I'm saying is like you go get Google AdSense or you go get something like that for ads. And if you start to get big enough that you can actually start courting people, yes, you're right. You can go court people for ads. But the point of the matter is that it isn't as expensive and it isn't as like technologically prohibitive as it once was. It's 2013. There's a plenty of open source shit that can help you with this. There's plenty of open source projects that help with like serving. Also, there's like social media in order to get a hold of people. Like, and I'm not saying that you shouldn't use the free services to begin with. It's always good to take advantage of that in the beginning just so that you can get your footing and stuff like that. But eventually, you're going to have to say to yourself, why am I letting these motherfuckers take a cut?
Exactly. And Kiyok's right. And I know this for a fact. Everything she said is true. You can start with Google AdSense. You don't need video ads in your videos. You can just have ads on the side of the videos.
And
that's how YouTube started.
And like the thing is like eventually you could court some people like to put ads on your show. Like you could say, and this show is sponsored by X. And,
yeah, you could actually during the show actually make a deal where you say this episode's brought to you by Ovaltine and you drink some Ovaltine.
Yeah,
Ovaltine will give you $50 and the lifetime supply of Ovaltine.
You're also overestimating the DIY effort of no, the I'm average not. Person to be able to sit down well, and
it's
do that.
Really not that
versus
hard,
it is. Here's you have to you go if you want to like incorporate video ads and into things. I can guarantee you anybody that jumps from Blip into doing their own thing will have a hell of a time trying to reestablish themselves.
Yeah, don't do video ads at first. Like at first, you're going to have to do it slow.
You're basically telling people that who are already have a successful Blip channel that they're already making a living off. And I do know people that are making a living off of Blip.
If they are happy with how things are going, that's great.
But you're telling them that they're going to have to take a huge, undeterminable period hit.
It's called independence.
Investment in your future. Sometimes we have to take a hit in order to get to the next level.
I'm telling you, it's not as easy as you guys are just making it sound.
Something as a business, you have to do that. You have to. There's no. I'm going to stay this way forever.
How many people have successfully branched off from Blip? That's what I'm curious about because I'm hearing this conversation go on.
I don't think anybody's.
If you're at the point where you're actually starting to say to yourself, I think I can make more money off this.
Okay.
It probably is time to make more money.
You know
off
who
of
I think
How many
can
people
make
have successfully done that branching off of Blip though?
I'm pointing out that maybe not a lot, but I'm pointing out it is possible.
I'm thinking that somebody who is in a great position to make a lot of money here is a middleman that will say, "Hey, I will take for a price or whatever. I will take you off of Blip, and we will do basically exactly what you guys are all saying." Because I'm pretty sure that the average creator on there doesn't. I'm going to say they're most likely don't have the time to do that. So if anybody out there thinks that they can totally wrangle this for somebody and just set them up and let them go on their own.
But then again, it's dealing with the middleman.
I've got an example. I think Red Letter Media is hosting their shit from inside on their own service.
It's coming from inside the site.
Well, I'm just saying that they're not going through a service and they're doing pretty fucking well. So there we go, people. Here's some people with some gumption. And that's what you got to have. You've got to have that ability to say.
It's not gumption you need. It's resources and know-how.
Let me give you an example, Fest. Let's say that and this is a good example because it's an example that that's actually very close to me. Let's say that I want to start a web design service, and let's say first of all I do it mainly through WordPress sites. I just reskin WordPress sites, set them up, get them ready. And then I find that WordPress really isn't the best platform for the type of customers I have. I have to stop using the free tool, and I have to say, okay, what's the best CMS I can use? What's the best solution I can use? I don't want to be reliant on WordPress. I want to use something that I know is more secure, and Kiriak will back me up on this, more secure.
Well, and I will also say this. I don't use WordPress because I just don't want to deal with the having to update the service all the
time. Exactly.
They'll change it because I used Blogger for a while for my blog, and then they went and fucked me and changed it and said I couldn't use it the way I was using it anymore.
Exactly.
You know, putting it, yeah.
Exactly. So I get to that point where I'm big enough to where I have large customers and I don't want to put a large customer on WordPress. I actually have to say, okay, now's the time. I have some money stored up from when times were good with the WordPress thing. I'm going to hire a web programmer and say, okay, this is my idea of an ideal CMS. Build it for me.
Or that's like what I did.
But exactly. Kiriak built her own CMS.
Yeah, I did because I said to myself, I want some custom features that no one else offers. And exactly. I admit that I am lucky in that my husband is a programmer and he can help me with these things. But at some point, you do have to say to yourself, and I did it, and admittedly, I am smaller than probably the size at which you should start saying, I need my own. But at some point, you do have to say to yourself, this is not fitting my needs anymore, or I don't want to be tied to this anymore. It's time to be a big boy and grow up.
Exactly. And that's the thing. That's actually one thing I'm looking into right now is actually a custom CMS that will do everything I want it to.
I have one.
So actually, I should talk to you guys about that because I want some customization of my own as well, and I am
we
actually
can
willing
do that, dude.
And
we
I'm actually willing to pay
capable.
For it.
I
we're
will...
very capable of doing it. And the other thing is that any features that you want might be someone else might want to use them. So integrating them into the CMS would be the best thing to do.
Exactly, and that's one thing that I want to do. I want to be able to write a CMS to basically, which because I want the power. I want certain power that Drupal has. I want some ease of use and a friendly portal for dumb customers that honestly WordPress doesn't have, but WordPress at least pretends to try to have.
But so we should definitely talk because we can add some of the features, and that also plays into other project.
All right,
exactly. All right, and that's the thing. I just have that's the thing. You know, I actually started a design business with a coworker that is more in the email marketing space, but we are going to go into websites, and that's one thing that I've been looking at. I've been looking at other CMS. I've been looking at Expression Engine. I've been looking at the
dot new. Now, okay, I'm going to stop you here. I'm going to concede that, that's probably a good idea, but here's still the problem. It isn't as easy as you guys are making it. Let me finish talking, please.
Okay, I'll let you
finish. It's not as easy. You're both already very code savvy. Your average creator is not code savvy like that. They were not going to be able to just... It's going to take a lot of time for them to even figure out where to start looking for a reputable somebody, a dependable somebody. It is not bullshit. I didn't even get to finish.
Dude, there are so many webcomic artists that have gotten programmers from their fans because someone says, I am a web programmer. I would love to help you out. And exactly. This has happened. You know, you can't count on that to happen, but there are people out there who are willing to help out. And here's the thing.
It's a little bit easier
with
it.
Of the programming doesn't hurt because then at least you know a little bit about what's going on when you eventually do talk to
but I'm talking about
exactly.
the I'm talking about the video producers. I'm talking about the video producers that basically this is their full-time job. No, Ben, I didn't even get to finish before. This is their full-time job. This is what they're doing full-time. This is what they're already on. They're making a living off of. It takes a lot of extra.
It's not a fault on my part.
It takes a lot of extra time to do this. They're not ready for that. I'm just saying that it's not as easy as you're making it sound.
Okay.
So somebody going to them would probably be a lot better opportunity for that first initial, a programmer to go to them and sell them.
Let me step in here because I've got an example here. You're basically saying that if you have a full load, you cannot go to the next level. Well, that's bullshit because let me tell you about how my my uncle-in-law.
All I'm saying, it's not as easy as you're making it sound. That is all. That is all.
Basically, you have even in other professions, at some point, the sacrifice of going to the next level is necessary. Like my uncle was a photographer, but what he wanted to start doing was getting into more studio photography. So he had to take some time off, and the money, it was a great bit of money, and it was a huge investment, and it was a huge gamble, and everyone was worried for him and, you know, thought, oh God, is he making a mistake? And fortunately, it worked out. And now he's like doing photography for big surfboard companies in Hawaii. He's been going to Africa and doing the bikes for children's programs and things like that. And the thing is that it is business is like that. Business is about risk. And everyone has seemed to have forgotten that because these large corporations that go around spending shit tons of money and just get whatever the fuck they want has made everyone think, oh, well, I just, you know, only need money. Yes, money is very necessary to the issue. But the thing is that at some point you have to accept that we aren't in the world of the corporations. We're still in the real world where business takes risk.
And you have to sometimes work 20 hours a day if you're starting a business or you're starting your own, own boss. That's one thing that people seem to forget is if you're your own boss, that means you have to work 20 hours a day sometimes.
Yeah, that means you're going to maybe have to be your own programmer, and that fucking sucks. But
yes, exactly. And
I think we're arguing the same side of the coin here. All I'm saying is not as easy as you guys were making it sound, and you just
and you just said it's not easy. It's not easy, but it's unnecessary.
I was just going through the steps. I was only going through the steps of what it would take in order to do this. I'm not saying, oh yeah, you just go down to the store and you throw this on the website and there you go.
All right, no, I think we spent 20 minutes on basically saying,
yeah, we did actually
almost more or less agreeing. And four years ago,
I didn't know a lick of PHP. Until I decide, you know what, I don't want to always just be a web designer. I think I have to at least know a little bit of a web programming language. So I bought a book on PHP, and I taught myself some very rudimentary scripts. And now I actually know enough of PHP to be a little bit dangerous. But I at least took the effort to learn, because I'd made a decision that that my current skill set, you know, even though I have a very specific skill set that's very sought out after, I needed to shore it up and get some other skills in there. I made that decision.
And here's the other thing. In the coming years, programming is going to be literacy. Let's all be honest about this.
Exactly. Like, you're 100%
right. Smart countries are starting to teach their kids programming in schools, because the thing is that you're going to need these skills for the future. Because, like, the thing is that it's not just because, like, you're going to become a computer scientist or something like that. You're going to come across it at some point in your life, and it's if you want to have a job in the future. So it's probably a good idea to get into it. And the thing is that you don't have to specialize in it, but to be aware of it is good. Because, like, I know technical writers who have actually learned programming or about web technologies mainly so that they could be a better writer.
Exactly.
And maybe reading about programming for an hour a night, that might not be a bad thing to do.
Yeah, that's the thing. The thing is, what you're saying is people have to learn more about how the web works, especially if you want to work on the web.
And
you
especially
can't just
you just can't be
ignorant of, here's this magic box that I can put videos or comics in and money prints out.
Well, also, as corporations and governments become more restrictive about the internet, it is going to become more important to be able to understand how it works and how to use it, because you don't want to get tied up into a service and then be told, I'm sorry, we're going to take all the money, or we're going to only give you a pittance, because you're unable to go to the next level, which is host it yourself. And, like, that's the thing. Like, you have to be ready for, like, when the service is going to either go evil or go away. Because, like, with Blogger, I immediately had to find a new service. I use Facebook for right now, but it's mostly because I use it to broadcast. But for my own blog, I have my own software, because I said to myself, while I could have gone out and gotten WordPress, like I said, I just didn't want to keep updating WordPress. So I said, fuck it. I have access to a programmer, and I'm a designer. So we're just going to make our own.
Exactly.
I have to end this. Okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was planning on keeping all this, putting that after the end of the show, as Ben has suggested that I start doing.
Yay!
It's all very educational.
It is, and that's why I want to keep it. But it is going on for very too long.
Well, you can cut it down a little bit.
I am not going to go and edit all that.
Focused.
I am not going to edit the middle of that. The beginnings and ends, that's it. But I do got to get going. Ben, if you are available for like the next 10-15 minutes, I can talk to you about your tablet experience.
Okay.
But as far as like Kitty Hawk and Monty, do you want to thank you both for being around?
Well, do you talk to Kitty Hawk? She has a Cintiq.
Yeah, I have a Cintiq 24 HD.
All right.
The big one.
All right,
is huge.
All right, I'll talk to you a little bit about that, since I don't think we talked about the HD. Only if you've had experience with other tablets. Okay.
I have.
I'll talk to you both. Monty, I do want to thank you for putting up with us. I know you didn't get a chance to say a whole lot, but
we had a partial Monty this time. Maybe next time we'll have a full Monty.
Hopefully.
God, it's just, you know, I mean, everybody on here is very, very knowledgeable, and so it's like, well, let's see, I can contribute this little thing here, or it's like, well, you know, I can be the person who doesn't know all the things that can ask the questions to help dumb it down.
But you had some good insights, and also you did find that that fan grab thing, which is pretty hilarious. So
I find it fascinating. Maybe the guy can make a bit of chump change off of it, but I just don't see it as viable. I think I found it on Comic Speed or something, but it's just like, how do you make money doing that nowadays?
Plus, you were the only one who picked up the Eisner Awards thing. Because so much to figure out. Not everyone's going to be able to grab it. Next show is June 2nd. We're going to be talking about Strip Search, and I know, Monty, you wanted to be a part of that one.
Yeah, and I have watched every episode, though some of the last few ones I've skimmed through just because they've been boring choices of subject matter.
All right. And so so that's still set. I'll get back in emails about that if I can find somebody else or not. I think, Ben, you're still on for that?
Yes.
All right. All right, so we at least got three people that'll be on for that. Kitty Hawk, I think you're bowing out of that episode.
The strip search. Yeah, I haven't watched enough of it. I wouldn't feel like I'm qualified enough.
Well, I'm gonna actually sit. I haven't watched any of it yet, so I'm gonna sit.
About Terrence? Because I know Terrence has watched quite a bit of it. At least he said so.
I know.
Yeah, you should Terrence, get him on.
Terrence is unavailable for a while for his job, and I'm not able to actually move things to a different day right now for that, because he's going to be the only other day that he'd be available would be when we record on Saturday, because that would be Sunday for him. Mm-hmm. And he has a day job, unlike Kitty Hawk, which I'm not sure.
I have a day job.
But okay, a morning job he has.
Okay, yeah.
I have a day job. I work until 5 Central.
Yeah. I work at whenever.
All right. So there's that. I'll get with you, and then when Terrence is able to come back, we'll get some of his opinion on it when he comes back. To be fair, but there's that. Monty, I'm going to go ahead and let you go, and I'm going to talk to with Kitty and Ben.
All right. Signing off.
Thanks again.
Nice to talk with you.
Oh, he's gone already. Oh, that was quick. No chance for short, long goodbyes. All right, hang on 1 second. I'm going to stop this.